Okay. Today is November 28, 2022. It is Monday morning, and I'm happy to welcome everyone in front of me and on the screen. And also a big Shalom Aleichem to all those that will hear this year afterwards. Yesterday's year, I already got many, many responses. And I have to say, I'm very happy that I could discover what Reb Menashe Klein was talking about. I only want to add that people have contacted me. There was another scandal with the Hasidic Rebbe, a money scandal, and he went to jail, the Spinker from Borough Park. But that scandal was a few years later. I remember the scandal well because I was in Borough Park at the time that it broke. And I remember the FBI was very intelligent. I guess the Mossad must have trained them because they didn't arrest the Rebbe in Borough Park. They arrested him in Los Angeles. And it was explained in the papers. I understood right away. They were worried if they'd arrest him in Borough Park, there'd be riots in Los Angeles, Mela. Actually, the Los Angeles arrest wound up in a shiloh that came by way. He was arrested on Friday. It was money laundering. It wasn't the scandal that we're talking about with Rav Menashe Klein. Was a terrible sex scandal, a chilul Hashem of the highest order. But the one in Borough Park, which also, I mean, I don't want to minimize money, but somehow in my mind, money is a little bit less terrible than the crime that happened on the airplane from Australia. And what happened was he was arrested Friday and he was released on bail. And that Friday, everyone knew about it, was on the radio in Los Angeles. There were, I think, another 20 people ultimately arrested. And he davened at the Young Israel of Century City. And the poor rabbi had a tremendous quandary, a tremendous problem. Some balabatim said, I have to have shishi. And other balabatim said, God forbid. Anyway, he wound up getting shishi. And I got some letters, calls, I remember. What do I think? I said, look, you have to have mercy on the rabbi. He's caught in a quicksand here. If he doesn't give him shishi, all right, what you have to do is say he's innocent yet. He hasn't been found guilty. He was just arrested. But he got shishi, and that remained an interesting question that hangs fire, but we'll leave that for another time. Regarding everything we've spoken about, with many lectures ago, I mentioned with the Satmuruv that the whole psychological question when someone does you a favor that you can't repay, how do you react? And I went into either we love the person or hate the person because he's put us in a position where we can't repay. A Talmud finally heard that lecture, Steve Wagner, my dear Talmud, and We know each other well. And Steve Wagner wrote to me a whole story with a person with the Chatam Sofer, a person sentenced to death, tried for murder, convicted, sentenced to death. The family came to the Chatam Sofer, use your influence. And the Chatam Sofer used his influence and turned out he was able to get him released. They bribed and the man was free. So he now comes to the Chatam Sofer and wants to see him. The Gabbai tells the Chatam Sofer, the ex-convict is waiting to see you, tell him to go away. Ex-convict waiting to see you, tell him to go away. Three times. The fourth time he gives the Gabbai a box, a little box, give him this box from me. Comes back again and now the Chatam Sofer lets him in. And he says, Rebbe, I don't understand. You didn't let me come. I wanted to thank you. You saved my life. How can I repay you? And then you give me a box with five little pebbles? And the Chatam Sofer says, look, you can never repay me for what I did. I saved your life. So if you can't repay me, there's a good chance you're going to resent me because I put you in such an awkward position. If you later throw stones at me, throw these little pebbles, I shouldn't get hurt. So Baruch Shekivanti L'tash G'daylem, that my psychological analysis is right on with the Chatam Sofa. And I thank Steve Wagner. Regarding the question of a beard, which we've spoken too much about, so Zayin Gesund, the generation, grow beards, just don't bother us, we're living in the past. And anyway, a Talmud writes to me, this is taken, Rabbi Moshe Katz quotes Lieutenant Birnbaum's biography. Remember that biography, the Oxrail book, Lieutenant Birnbaum, World War II? The first Shechet for Empire Chickens was Moshe Leb Lvovitz, the son of Reb Yeruchim. Reb Mendelovich of Torah Vadas came to see his Shechita and was extremely impressed. He told the son that the family can buy it. When he was asked if he would eat it, he said, yeah, if the Shechet grew a beard. Rabbi Lvovitz was told what Mr. Mendelovich said, and he responded, my Rebbe taught me you shecht with a chalaf and not with a beard. All right, so that also is an interesting story. Now, regarding, we spoke about Jerome Mintz. Regarding Jerome Mintz, who we've quoted from extensively and quote from him again today, so I asked the question, who is he, who was he? And I said, I believe he was not religious, etc. I want to thank Ira Vishnitzer, my Talmud in Chicago. He already, when I quoted from the first volume many years ago, it was when I was doing a survey history of Hasidus, must be 20 years ago already. So he checked it out for me then. And it turns out that his, let me get it right, I called my cousin's husband, Dr. Milton Taylor, who taught molecular biology at Indiana University for at least 30 years and is now retired. Milton tells me he knew Jerry very well and has a copy of his book on Hasidim. Milton considered Jerry a mensch. Jerry was raised in Brooklyn in a secular household. After high school, he joined the Marines. Now, he married Betty, who from Milton probably underwent the Reform conversion. Jerry was a founding member of Congregation Bet Shalom, a Reformed synagogue near Bloomington. Milton says that Jerry was very, very interested in Israel. And I asked Milton if he knew how Jerry's interest in Hasidicism developed. Milton wasn't sure, but he did say that Mintz's initial primary focus was Spain. Could be, this is in parentheses, based on the fact that he was raised in Brooklyn, he might have been naturally curious to find out more about Hasidim. So let's put it this way, my initial understanding was correct. We're dealing here with a secular person who was doing research sociologically. Whatever interested him, it was not Yiddishkeit or Torah, but from a sociological point of view. He probably knew Yiddish from growing up in Brooklyn. In other words, we don't know where his parents were born. Maybe they spoke Yiddish to each other, secular household, but it's very shayach that Yiddish was their native language. But he evidently knew Yiddish, but his interaction with the Hasidim didn't affect him. In other words, he remained the same secular, later Reformed Jew, marrying a non-Jew, Reformed conversion, etc. But I thank Dr. Wishnitzer for the analysis. Now, regarding the terrible events that we spoke about, Korf and Vechta, these had a big impact. You can't imagine. People checked it out. I imagine people listening to me said, it can't be true. Because if you recall, I said that if you wrote a novel and you wrote about Hasidim fighting and cutting off beards, it can't be true. What's this novelist talking about? So I want to tell you that one Talmud checked it out to the New York Times, and here's the end result of the court case. New York Times, man cleared of cutting Hasidic rabbi's beard. And a whole article explained the machloket between the Hasidim and Lubavitch and Satmar. Here's an article from a Jewish newspaper, Terrorism in Brooklyn. And it talks about, with the names, everything I told you in class, I don't have to repeat it. So you see, this really happened. And as sad as it sounds, each one, you understand, the Satmar justify it. These people were, proaching, is that the word they use? Picking up people, membership.
Poaching
from one synagogue to another, from one Hasidus to another. So this is where we stand. Now, I just want to go a step further, and this reverberated, the machloket, the trial, and this guy named Cohn, who wasn't really a Satmar, he was a Malach. But nevertheless, his enmity towards Chabad was very great, and he was the one who was on trial and accused, and Lechner, and all that happened. Now, after this happened, it's interesting to see the subsequent development. He spent his whole time, whatever free moments he had from his responsibilities as the controller, I would say, of Satmar and the money and all that goes on, his major goal, I'm quoting from Mintz, page 169, his major goal appears to have been to attack the Lubavitcher Rebbe for alleged violations of the laws of modesty. Cohn purports that the Rebbe has broken the code that keeps the sexes apart. To prove his argument, he displays a handful of colored photographs which show the Rebbe handing out dollar bills and educational material to women who pass in long lines before him. The photos were taken by Lubavitcher Chassidim, who are considered by them to be totally innocuous and are readily available in Crown Heights and other locales for purchase as mementos of the Rebbe. They are part of the growing memorabilia of the people paying homage to the Rebbe. Cohn, however, has carefully selected photographs in which the eyes of the elder Rebbe appear to meet the eyes of the women who pause to greet him and accept the dollar bill given to encourage tragedy. And you all know you don't need photographs. That all you have to do is type in Lubavitcher Rebbe into YouTube, and you will have enough material on the Rebbe to keep you busy for 7 straight years, doing nothing else except davening 3 times a day, endless farbrengens and the giving out of the dollar bills. I mean, what Lubavitcher, see, everyone compares Lubavitcher to Breslov, but there's one big difference. No one has seen the Breslov Rebbe. No one is alive today who saw the Breslov. No one was alive 100 years ago who saw the Breslov. Today with Lubavitcher, I remember we were on the Upper West Side, and we ate out with a Talmidim of mine, and a deli of sorts. I mean, nothing's a real deli after Shmulka Bernstein's. Nothing is on that level. But a deli of sorts. And on either side, one screen, another screen, Farbrengens of the Rebbe all the time. Evidently, it's Chabad Balei Tshuva.
Deli Kasba.
What's the name?
Deli Kasba.
Deli Kasba, oh, beautiful name. And you see, Chabad today is different than Breslov, because millions and millions of dollars have been put into taking movies, videos, working them out, revitalizing them, what would be the refurbishing them. I don't know if there's a technical name, what they can do with the computer. It's like
enhancing
old... Enhancing them. But it's like an old... an old movie. You take classic movies before 1950, 55, they color them. They colorized movies. A classic movie, colorized. Here you have the Rebbe. Not only that, I told you in the 1980s, the early 80s, I had a Talmud who was a Chabadnik, an interesting Talmud, a character par excellence. And he bought me a gift. He wanted to honor the Rebbe. He bought me a gift to Yudkat Kislev for 4 o'clock in the morning at Binyanei HaUmah. So I have this ticket, and I get up early. I mean, today I get up early whether I like it or not, but then I had to make an effort to get up early. And I go to Binyanei, and I drove the middle of the night. I go to Binyanei HaUmah, and there I am, 10 o'clock New York time. It was, if it's 10 o'clock then, it's 5 o'clock our time. The Farbrengen is beginning. I see the Rebbe closer than I ever saw him when I went to Farbrengen's in person. And then I noticed something. Everyone sitting around me, thousands of people, everyone has earphones. So I poked the guy next to me, what's the earphone? There were 3 different types of earphones. One, you put them on, you heard the Rebbe in English. One, you put them on, you heard him in Hebrew. A third one, you heard the Rebbe in French. I was the only one I could see within eyesight that understood the Rebbe. I didn't need earphones. I understood everything. And I looked around. You know how much money has been put in the TypeScript? Right at the bottom, they put in what the Rebbe is saying in Yiddish, English translation. And I imagine they have it in French as well. And all this. So you see, Chabad is on a different level than Breslov. You can't compare them. To me, it's, look, I'm a Litvak. I have to be honest with you. That I got to look at a Rebbe who's not alive. On the other hand, I have to be honest too. If someone would give me a video of my Rebbe, Mori Rebbe, giving a Yotzai Chi in the 1950s, I'd raise $1 million for him. For that video, $1 million. Is a mil worth anything today? I have to say $1 billion. $1 billion. Oh, wow. But on the other hand, I recognize the Rebbe's not alive. I have to have a new, right, I don't know, it's hard. A Litvak can't find a new Rebbe. I've said this, if you heard my lectures on Hasidus, I said, a Chassid always has a Rebbe. When the Chassid's young, the Rebbe's old. When the Chassid's old, the Rebbe's young. But a Litvak hat a Rebbe in Molden Leben, once in your life. But fascinating, but we don't need pictures. So we see the Rebbe. So tell me, what's the answer? Lubavitcher Hasidim find such charges against their elderly leader to be ridiculous. And Mintz quotes, imagine in front of what, 10,000 people. It's so stupid. You follow? The Rebbe's looking at a woman. Look, the Rebbe's influence, it's beyond words. I don't have to elaborate. How many people he made Shomrei Shabbos. And this convention now, it's Kiddush Hashem, the publicity and the dedication and the problems. Who can deal with the Ukrainians, with the Russians, with what's going on? These are human beings. These are people, blood and flesh. It's our cousins. And Chabad is on top of it. Now, this Kohn goes even further. He visits Israel. And he goes to Rav Shach. And I'll quote exactly, they quote Kohn word by word. But I have to tell you, you have no idea how deep this vision went, how deep this split went. And what was the greatness of Agudat Yisrael? The greatness of Agudat Yisrael, it achieved the impossible. It united Yekkers, Litvaks and Hasidim. And Charlie, I want to tell you, this was not a small matter. You understand? I'm telling you facts now. This is not making up. It's not art scroll. Reb Chaim Brisker, if anyone tells you, you read publications, one of the great founders of Agudat Yisrael, Reb Chaim Soloveitchik, Reb Chaim Brisker. Anyone tells you that, Abe? Smack his face. and call him a degenerate distorter of Torah history. Reb Chaim, yes, he attended before World War I, there was an attempt to get started, 1912. He attended that conference. And he walked out. That's it. You read, I might want to, I'm publishing down the line. It's all written in computer. It's ready for publication, but I'm not ready to publish it. You read all the facts and all the sources. I walked out and said to Chaim, what are you so upset about? And you know, do you know his answer or not? Reb Chaim told us, I've told this, but maybe 20 years ago, 30 years ago. Reb Chaim said, told the story that this lady, the Beit HaLevi came to a new town, became Rav from Schlutz to Brisk, and his wife went into the grocery store, and this young man, 18, 19 years old, is, you want potatoes, you want onions, you want this. Wie viel, how much? And he answered, zwei kopek. Everything is 2 kopek. Abe, have you shopped lately? Go into fruit and vegetables, not everything is the same price. Potatoes are one price, oranges are another. So he went over Ben to the owner of the store and said, I don't understand. Alts is ain't here, but one price? What's going on? So the owner says, listen, this kid is challenged. And the Rav used to speak about this, that in every city in Europe, it's not like today, they have special classes and homes. The community had to take care of the challenged kids. So this kid is able to work, but all he can say is, Zwei Kopek. Can't say anything else. He doesn't know anything else. He can't pronounce anything else. I'll give you the right price. So Reb Chaim says, I am a challenged kid. Ich verstehe gar nicht. Nor Zwei Kopek. I don't understand anything except Zwei Kopek. Was ist mein Zwei Kopek? Divrei Torah. Eba Rav from Deutschland can, if a let me say it in English. If a rabbi from Germany can come and speak for a half hour and not quote one chazal, it's not for me. And Reb Chaim walked out. Okay, now you understand this was Reb Chaim, and I'm not playing games here. You have no idea what happened afterwards, but that's, let that stand to my article. It's not the article you have, it's beyond that, something much bigger. Now, they got united. Hasidim, Litvakim, Yekis, we're talking everyone. Rabbi Sproya, the Gera Rebbe, you know what, the chief of Baruch Berlevovich, the Chofetz Chaim, you all saw the movies in 1923, the first Knesset Gedolah. The Chofetz Chaim coming, they re-enhanced that movie now. It's very beautiful. It's very moving and very beautiful. So it was a great achievement. Could you imagine less than 70 years later, Rav Shach totally splits Agudat Yisrael. Total. It winds up, you have Shas, Degel HaTorah, Agudat Yisrael. And they asked Rav Shach, how can you do this? This is the Agudas Yisrael, the Chofetz Chaim had gebaut, the Chofetz Chaim built it. And you're splitting it like this? And he answered, it's not the Agudas Yisrael that the Chofetz Chaim knew. And Rav Shach was really convinced that Chabad was because of him. That's what the split begins with, but you have to understand, in Israel, the biggest Hasidus is Ger. Ger joined forces with Chabad. Once you attack Chabad, you're attacking Ger, you're attacking Hasidus. The split was tremendous, and until today, the only reason they talk to each other is they know if they'll run separate tickets, they both may wind up like merits. You follow? They're Chutz Chasimah. So you got to give credit. The Achus Chasima keeps them together. Same with Maftal, Baruch Hashem, Ben Gavi and Smotrich are dancing together. It's a miracle. It's the Achus Chasima. Now, when I met with Rav Shach and told him all about Lubavitch, I felt I've done the right thing. He made a split with the Orthodox Jewish community against Lubavitch. I spoke to many of his Talmidim and tried to educate them. He has hundreds and thousands of followers. Shach was already convinced, but certain things pressed him not to go out in public. But when I showed him the pictures, I proved it. Oh, he sent a letter against Lubavitch. His opinion was close to mine. He needed more hard evidence. I brought people to testify what he saw in Lubavitch. He then carried out a holy war against Lubavitch. He has excommunicated them, you see, and this is this Jew talking. Now, I reveal this, you're upset, Morty, relax.
I don't understand what's wrong.
Well, they were convinced he's not frum, and he looks at women, and he hands out dollar bills. Das nicht gesehen in unserer Jugend. We didn't see it on our youth, you understand? It caused a tremendous split. I can tell you how it affected me. And this is the story I never wanted to tell in public, but it's time. I told it already once. I'll tell it again. The last Knesiyah Gedolah was 1980. I knew already there's a tremendous split. There was tremendous Achmas Nefesh, tremendous hatred between the Hasidim, the Mitnagdim. But I said, I have to get to this Knesiyah Gedolah because my life, I've become, whatever the reasons are, I wish people would say I'm a Talmud Chacham. No one yet has ever called me a Talmud Chacham, but they call me a great historian. All right, to be called a great historian doesn't make me happy, but I have to live with it. So I said, I have to get to this Knesiyah Gedolah. Then, with all the money you could come up with, you could not get it into Knesiyah Gedolah. The place was mobbed. Hasidim, Ger alone would have filled the whole Knesiyah Gedolah. So you needed vitamin P, protexia. So my mind worked quickly, and the world head of Agudat Yisrael is a cousin to one of my good friends from America. So I turned to the cousin who knows me, and I said, you're Rav Shach's right-hand man, Nichnasta Ligadula, for one reason, to help Aaron Rakefet get in. I am a reporter for Jewish Action, and I get press credentials. Jew, unbelievable. Now, I'm with the reporters. So I say, you know, I got to play the game right. I'm going to make believe I'm an American, like when I went to Russia. You understand, for a shortly afterwards, I go to Russia. I was already being briefed for Russia while this is happening. I'm going to make believe I'm an American. I need, because I speak only English. The Sadranim, who took me to my seat and gave me gifts. I got books and whatnot. They gave me gifts. I have in my library publications, etc. And the Sadranim figured out this is an American dummy for Jewish Action. So they spoke Yiddish freely in front of me. These Sadranim were 6'6" wide, Gerich Siddim, and word of honor, I wish this wasn't so. Word of honor, Rav Shach walks in. Everyone, I hear a turmoil, people standing up, Rav Shach. And I hear one Sadran saying to another, Oysa Ish is a Ranga coming. Ben, can you translate that, please? Oysa Ish?
That person often referring to Yeshua.
Now you got it. Jesus just entered. You should know at that moment, I knew that there's no hope for compromise, reunification. It's finished. Like the Gemara in Baba Kama, when they sent up a pig, remember, to the Beis HaMikdash when they were fighting, They knew there'd be churban by it. I knew it at that moment. And you can see the enmity, what developed here. And the Kohen speaks on and on. Cutting off a beard, what's so terrible about it, he says. You can still, he says about Kof, about Lechta, you can still be the Lubavitcher Rebbe. Lubavitcher Rebbe doesn't have a big beard. He shaved it until he became red. And that's not, it may or may not be true. Lubavitcher, some people grow a big beard. Some people don't have that ability. It's the genes, the chromosomes in you. But, wow, the enmity, what went on. And these were two major cases, Kof and Wechter. Now, the end result, Wechter, and this is fascinating, we mentioned it last week, he ultimately moves Williamsburg to Borough Park, and even in Borough Park he fears for his life, goes on Aliyah. So there's a whole, I think Talmud who sent it, a whole Wikipedia article on him. And let me tell you, there was never a more successful Aliyah than his. He winds up becoming a teacher, a mashpia, well known in Chabad circles, and all his kids are involved with Lubavitch. His Harav David Yosef Leib Wechter is a Rosh Yeshiva in the Lubavitch Yeshiva in Toronto. His son-in-law, Harav Menachem Mendel Groner, the Shliach of the Rebbe in Australia. That's from the Groner family. Harav Chaim Eliyahu Golachovsky is involved with the Achraya Agav HaMikvaot Beveitin Rabbani Chabad Berdechel. He's in charge of the Mikvaot that are under Chabad auspices in Israel. Harav Moshe Guraye, son-in-law, Shaliach HaRebbe Beir Buffalo, New York. Harav Yitzhak Shlomo Kurovitsky, son-in-law, Mora Harav Bebeit Horah Berechovat. Anyone recognize the name from Rechovat? Verosh Kolel Chasidot Erev Benachlat Har Chabad. So you see, his story, everything fell into place, everything worked out, and he was like, he's hitting his late 70s today, a full life and a new career without Atmos Nefesh, without Redifot, without anyone cutting his beard off, Alat Mata Kodesh. And I'll end off, and this last paragraph of Mintz is very special. In time, the students who followed Rabbi Mendel Wechter from Satna to Lubavitch established new ties to Lubavitch families and worked out their relationship with their own families. Some of the young men became emissaries of the Lubavitch Rebbe and directors of Chabad houses. A few established marital ties in the Lubavitch community. That's Wechter, prime example. Some carried their own customs into Lubavitch. Two of the boys from the Papa Hasidim who attended the Lubavitcher Yeshiva and married into Lubavitch families continue to wear shraimalim on the Shabbos and holidays. You know, to wear a shraimal, a chabadik? When's the last time you saw a chabadik with a shraimal? Now listen to this last sentence. At those times, their forehats appear in the crowd of black fedoras like exotic migratory birds who have strayed from their familiar route and are nesting in a strange land. Beautiful. Well said. And this is Chabad, this is Satma. This is the 1970s into the 80s. When the, I would say, the conflict was at its apex. Coming back to the headgear, I lectured about this extensively a number of years ago, there's no question that the Lubavitcher Rebbe, when he waved the Shtreimel, he was making a massive innovation with modernity and reality. And I claim, I don't know if this will be proven years to come, I claim that waving the Shtreimel enabled Lubavitch to become an international multi-hundred thousand people movement. You see, when you require a Shtreimel, you're making a request that maybe in Borough Park you can feel at ease, Williamsburg, Yerushalayim, B'nai Brak, but remember, Chabad put on in Melbourne, in Sydney, in Johannesburg, in Cape Town, in Berlin, all over Germany, Russia, read about Russia, Ukraine, and the very fact that you can wear a simple black fedora, they have their own type of hat, it becomes also a portable ghetto identity, but it's a lot simpler to wear that than to wear a Shtreimel. And here I want to tell you a beautiful story, a true story, which also reflects on the Rebbe. Chabadnikim, there was unbelievable Mesirat Nefesh in Russia during the entire communist period. I've encouraged Chabad, and people said they're working on it, to come out with an encyclopedia of all the Chabadnikim who, lo aleinu, were killed or exiled, including the Lubavitcher Rebbe's father, the seventh Rebbe's father, paid a very heavy price. And these people were meisa nefesh, it's beyond description. One of the Chabadnikim who got out, Fatofas, was famous mashpia, and finally got out, and he comes to 770, and you know, you can imagine what it means to someone. Again, you have to have been in communist Russia, I mean, to have seen what it was like, that if you get one Steinzel smuggled in, it's like a gift from heaven. And then you come out to the free world, where every Tom, Dick, and Harry can have 1,000 Sfarim, what's the big deal, whatever you want, you can buy it. So, no, it's revolutionary. So here this Fatofas, Menachem Mendel Fatofas, gets out, and he comes, and he's at Lubavitch, and he wants to fit in. You just read, how would you feel wearing a Shtreimel among a sea of black fedoras? And he comes to the first Fabrenian. The third Fabrenian he comes to, he takes off, he's no longer wearing a Russian hat that they wore in Russia, a beret. That's what they wore. That's what they wore, a simple beret. And he's wearing a black hat, a Chabad hat. And the Rebbe sends a message to him to go home and change into the hat he came out of Russia with. That's the hat you have to wear in Chabad. They should see and remember what you went through. You weren't born here, you weren't raised here. So this is the Rebbe. He saw beyond what was in front of him. He didn't live only in now. The past and present were with him as well. And that's a beautiful story, in my opinion. Okay, now I want to go further. We're coming to something very unique and very different, very, very important if we want to understand what's going on today. The world doesn't stand still. My nephew in America gave me some speakers. He said, attach it to your computer and you'll be able to hear better. And I'm using these speakers, and then they rip, they don't work, the cord, the wire, I have to plug into the wall and plug into the computer. Well, it reaches a point, don't work. And I leave them downstairs, someone takes them, maybe they know how to fix it. And I ask my grandson, get me something for the computer that we can enhance the sound. So when Gran and I are watching a movie out of the 1930s, the sound will be good. And he said, laughs, he says, no deal, no big deal. I think it was 65 shekel. Two speakers plug right into the computer. You don't need the wall. And I can't believe it. Wow, fabulous. Cost next to nothing. Beautiful. And he laughs. He says, Sabe, this is from a play game. A play, I didn't know he's talking about something. You tell me if I'm pronouncing it right. Play game.
PlayStation.
PlayStation, whatever. And to the kid, you know, he looked at me. What a dummy my grandfather is. This is the latest thing. It's nothing with nothing. Oh, my. Life does not stand still. And these machloikot, what we spoke about, it's a thing of the past. There can be many reasons why. The Satmar Rav, Rabbi Yoelish, was an overwhelming figure. The present Satmar Rabbanim, no one is an overwhelming figure. That's part of it. Lubavitch today does not have a live Rebbe. It's a different type of Hasidus. Everyone laughs at it, as I said a few minutes ago. It's negated compare it to Breslov. All right, Rakefet explained there may be a difference, but Rakefet may be right, may be wrong. Time will tell. And time moves on. And there's something else about today I want you to bear in mind. An article just appeared. I saw the article, even Rav Yehoshua sent it to me, and Rav Grunstein. It appeared, I think, in Jewish Press, if I'm not mistaken. But I saw the article, maybe it was in Tablet Magazine, that people send me links because I can't read things online. I have to have it in my hand. I print it out. Okay, the modern orthodox, and he writes about the problem of modern orthodoxy. His name is Avi Cement. And I've taught many members of the Cement family, I want you to know, over the generations. It's a Chabad family b'makar. You follow? Originally it was a Chabad. It's a Chabad. Some parts of the family are still very big in Chabad. I remember I taught a lady, it must be 50 years ago, from a Cement, an American girl from Florida, Cement. And I remember she told me in her family, if something falls on the floor on Pesach, you don't use it. You put it aside. It's chametz. Can't be used. Till you kosher it or clean it after Pesach. Can't be used on Pesach. Well, to my litvisha mind, wow, you're off the wall, lady. But I have to respect it. Chumris on top of chumris. I need not tell you Rabbi Scheinberg what he wrote about it, etc. Meika hadin on Pesach, pirurim, batelim umuvutalim. So Rabbi Scheinberg used to tell the women, don't go crazy cleaning and make yourself a nervous wreck. If there are a few crumbs, it doesn't matter. And knew you go tell that to a housewife, that she can leave crumbs around on the floor. And this girl, I remember like yesterday, I was in a state of shock in Michlala, and she's an American girl, and she's telling me something falls on the floor. Okay, so Avi Cement has to be from this community. And Avi Cement makes the point, it's part one of a three-part article, he makes the point that should be a poster boy for YU, for modern orthodoxy, but modern orthodoxy has a tremendous problem. And he created a storm a number of years ago. You have kids, go to yeshiva, go girls, boys, and they're so-called Shema Shabbos, and they text on Shabbos. Remember that storm? What do? They're texting. And here he tells a whole story. People who are so-called Shemesh Shabbos, where kippot, considered orthodox, they don't come to shul on Shabbos. Some of them come. I remember there was a, let me not mention the young Israel where it was, but I that young Israel, today it straightened out a little because competition opened right away from Israel. Shachris, there were 200 people there. Kriyat HaTorah, 400 people. Musaf Shabbos, 1,200 people. And it sounded like Yankee Stadium when Joe DiMaggio hit a Grand Slam home run. You follow? Talking. A shul opened a few blocks away where you had a sign to become a member that you will not talk during davening. And that shul took off, and the young Israel had to follow suit, or they would have lost more and more of the young generation. But you see, when I was growing up, everyone was running away from Torah. Who's interested in Torah? Who's interested? I'm reform, I'm conservative, I'm reconstructionist. I follow Shechtas. You know what Shechtas was? Morty, do you know? Your generation don't know? The seminary, Solomon Shechta. People used to refer to it Shechtas. Okay? Do you remember the Shechtas in Washington Heights? Did you hear that term? You heard it?
Yeah, I don't know if
it's
in the sense
that
you were referring to it now.
Shechtas. Okay. Today, he raises the issue and claims that at least 30-40% of the youngsters we educate wind up, yeah, we're Orthodox. They text on Shabbos. They don't daven properly. They don't make bracha properly. And you see what's happened. And I don't deny the statistics, although I don't want to be as negative or as black as he is. But I don't deny the statistics. Maybe it is. I don't know. I'm not teaching on that level. I can't tell you. When I taught in the... I just got an email this morning from a dear Talmud who's been my Talmud for over 40 years. And the reason he never was in my classroom, but he was a student in YU when I was teaching already. And he dormed, the high school dorm. And he used to say the kids would come back from their classes maledicting their rebbeim. There were reasons why. But kids who had Rothkopf, oh, they love, what a Rebbe, what a human being. Yeah, they loved the Rebbe. And that's how he picked me up, because his friend spoke highly of having Rothkopf as a Rebbe. All right. So he sent me an email today about his classmate from YU, the only one he knows who married a non-Jewish lady. So, all right, it happens. But you see, today, Torah is on the map. Kushner, who would ever dream? President of the United States has to complain he can't reach his daughter on Shabbos because she doesn't answer the phone. You know what that did for the New York Times, for the assimilated Jews? Could you imagine? The President of the United States has something 3 million other Jews in America don't have. He has Shomer Shabbos grandchildren. You got to give credit. Today it's fashionable. Whoever dreamt, what's her name, Miriam Bialik, if I have a friend, Mayim Bialik, I think is the name. She's an actress. She identifies Shabbos, kosher. There's a nanny now. I read on the Yeshiva World News, a nanny, a non-Jew. They say she's not, she looks Jewish to me. And she talks about, she works for from family. She knows more about Shabbos and kashrut and chulin than any Jew growing up in the Bronx in my time. So you see, it's fashionable. And now I tell you another story. You'll understand why all this is halacha l'maisa soon. B'didi Haviyofta. I was 23 when the yeshiva kicked me out, threw me into the rabbinate. I have to be honest, my first year was very difficult. And with all the years that have passed, now we're talking 60 years already, more than 60 years, I get more angry at the way I was treated. You know, you take a youngster in, treat him decently. Oh, what, that first year. Today I could handle every, today it's a joke for me, because I'm, but today who's interested in being in the act of rabbinate? But then it was difficult. Difficult. And I had one balabas among the balabas, very nice and decent and upright. I'll mention his name. It's nothing negative that I'm going to say. Moshe Greenberg. If you don't recognize the name, it's a sign that you're too young.
My cousin.
Professor Greenberg, the Bible scholar. Simon Greenberg, vice president. My gosh, you have yichus on all sides of the ocean, from near Israel to Tells, to Scranton, to Lakewood. Ribbono shel Olam, and then they throw you out of Lakewood. No wonder they knew this part of yichus. How is Moshe your cousin?
Simon is my grandmother's first cousin.
Oh my. Anyway, for you individual people here, I don't know what we're talking about. Simon Greenberg was rabbi of the biggest conservative temple in America, Har Zion in Philadelphia.
My grandmother taught from there.
Yeah, that was, Har Zion was a whole square block in Winfield, when Winfield was like the Upper East Side. You follow? We're not talking today, we're talking. So I used to do it. So Moshe lived in Bali. He was one of the youngest professor ever appointed to the U of P faculty, University of Pennsylvania faculty. He was a graduate of the seminary, an expert in Bible, in Semitics, a genius head, if you recall. Later comes an Aliyah and professor at Hebrew U, and you know, not a small matter, an American in Bible appointed professor at Hebrew U. It's not like I'm being appointed professor of American Jewish history. So, first of all, halacha l'maaseh, they were orthodox in their practice, 100%. I had conversations with Simon, I remember Dr. Greenberg, a senior, and he would tell me, I say, how could you be matter driving the shul on Shabbos? You know what he responded? It's not that we were matter driving the shul. Even after we were matter, no one comes to shul on Shabbos except for a bar mitzvah, etc. It's an interesting answer. So I got to know Moshe Greenberg very well. He was, almost a little older than I am, and very nice. But when we would speak about theology, he wasn't in my camp. Totally different. Who's greater, the Vilna Gaon or Rav Chaim Brisker? He would say, in Rav Chaim's generation, we have academic technique. We have academic scholarship. We have manuscripts. We can know much more than the Vilna Gaon and be much greater than the Vilna Gaon. So I learned very quickly, someone like this is orthoprax, but not orthodox. You follow? There's a big difference. Today, these youngsters that he describes that are texting on Shabbos and not coming to shul and coming in for Musaf to talk with their friends to catch up. And I can tell you, I saw this with my own eyes. It's a big difference. But today you're proud to say, I'm Orthodox. You're proud. We're no longer ashamed. Orthodox. But wait a minute, your practice is lacking. Ein adam tzadik b'aretz asher yaseh kulo tolo yechtar. The flesh is weak. How many times have you heard that language? The flesh is weak. Okay. Now, I want to come to the final chapter I'm going to be quoting from sources on Satmar. Besides what happens after the Rebbeim died, but we're ending off. And Chaim Dolfin, in his volume on Satmar Lubavitch, has a fabulous chapter on Kiryat Yovel, or Palm Tree City, which he visits in 2014. So it's 8 years ago. I don't think much has changed. I think what he describes here has just intensified. And I think we're going to see with our own eyes that you have in Satma and you have beyond Satma today. And the computer, the social media has enabled this to be very widespread. You have Haredi, I'm coined the term, Haredi prak, but not Haredi duck. And I have to tell you, this is something, it's hard for me to digest. I'll tell you what, very simply. How do we react naturally? You see someone with a long beard and payas, black clothes, black hat, strimal, you automatically take for granted, this is a good Jew, a chassid, a tzaddik. Min kenaf am soimich sein, we can depend upon him. And then you get to know him well. This guy is not even modern Orthodox. Quote, end quote. I don't like the term modern Orthodox, but he laughs at the Perushim. We spoke about yesterday again about Pshuta Shel Mikra. He's way on the side of the rationalist. He's laughing at the Midrashim. All right. He observes. I hope he observes. I'll tell you something else I haven't revealed, but it's time I should reveal it. It's one of the greatest dramatic experiences of my life. Absolutely true. When Malka and I went on Aliyah, we never thought we'd see America again. We were poor kids. We never lived in Israel. We barely were here. 3-week tour with RCA, 68. Vowed we'd settle within the year. We came back 10 months later, Olim Chadashim. God had other plans. I finished basic training and I got this campus from Mr. Gris. So it put the name Rakefet on the map. Government of Israel sent me back to address the RC convention, 1977. It's the first time I ever returned after coming in Aliyah in 69. I couldn't take Malka with young children. She remained here with the kids. Now, where do I stay? Government wanted to put me up in a hotel. Actually, I did spend a few nights there, the Empire Hotel in Upper West Side. I don't know if it exists today. But I said, let me try to stay with friends of mine. I'll be more comfortable. So I'll never forget, I come into America and I wind up staying with the Sladowski family, Rabbi Yitzchak and Faye Sladowski. Rabbi Yitzchak should have her for Shlomo. We're all much older. And at our age, it's a miracle to walk upright. And I come in, the Queens Mafia. I know all the Rabbanim that I stay with Holzer, and there's Albert, and there's Sladowski, and there's Shapiro. These all become bosom friends of mine. I taught many of their children, and they're in turmoil on the phone and calling and using an RCA. A house of ill repute in Borough Park burned down. Fire department and the police arrived. They took pictures of who was coming out. They used all their political influence to keep the pictures out of the daily news, the Daily Mirror, Dai L'Chakima B'Remiza. And that was my hello to America again after 8 years in Israel. I couldn't believe. All right. Jews, beard, payas, black clothes, author, tracks. Tell me, you frequent the House of Ill Repute? Is that author, docs? I don't know. Not my book. Okay. So you see, this is part of us in the modern world. We live under such influence, such attraction, such a pull, such a light. Modern, sophisticated. progress. What's the word they use? You hate homos. Homophobia, is that the word? I have it right? It's a new word. I never knew it in my youth. Homophobia. McCaffrey's a homophobic. He says that men and women, men, women, women, it's not normative. Okay? And this has affected everyone. Now, we'll come back to it. I'm now quoting, beginning on page 105. On August 1st, 2014, I decided the time had come for me and my wife to experience a Shabbos in the Satmar village of Kiryas Yoel near Monroe, New York. And you have to know, do you know Rabbi Chaim Dolan Dalfin? We're talking about a Chabadnik with a long beard, a cheerful guy, happens to be a very intelligent individual. I mean, to do his books and do his research, chalak kavod. All right, he doesn't have a PhD from Revel, but with a little effort he could achieve it. All right, he goes, our hosts were Rabbi and Mrs. Appel. The rabbi, around 65 years of age, was very nice, frum, and of course, a staunch Satmar chassid. He was, the chassid of the first Satmar Rebbe to come to America, Rabbi Yoel Teitelbaum, who passed away in 1979. The Shabbos that was rapidly approaching was Shabbos Chazon, the Shabbos before Tisha B'Av. Rabbi Appel asked me what shul I would be attending. I explained to him the purpose of this, quote, research Shabbos, end quote, to get to understand this community as much as possible. Towards that end, I planned on attending as many shuls and gatherings as possible. Knowing that the Satmar custom is to pray mincha long after sunset, Rabbeinu Tam, I asked Rabbi Appel if there's a non-Satmar shul I could daven before sunset. He suggested I walk to Rabbi Flohr's basement shul, which follows the custom of the Malachim Chassidim. And here, this is living proof. The Malachim who remained Malachim, they all gravitated towards Satmar. Do you recognize the floor name? No, more to you. You're from Baltimore. Charlie, Floor's Bookstore in Williamsburg. Do you recognize it? Recognize? Remember, my Mishnah Brura has a Floor little sticker in it, that it was bought in their store in Williamsburg. Floor, these were Torah V'das people. Many of the floors were Malachim. See, and at that time, my wife's family, the Sons, a good group of the Sons were Malachim. And he winds up, and he davens Bizman, and he davens Bizman in this basement, Malachim, and he's very happy that he found the Chabad Siddur there, a Nusach Ari Siddur. Rabbi Dolphin is very happy. Okay, and he makes the point, not most of the shul members are not Malachim, and they don't use a Chabad Siddur. Malachim use a Chabad Siddur because they're a breakaway from Chabad. We spoke about it. The sixth Rebbe was not frum enough for them. After finishing mincha, I wanted to move on to, quotes, taste, end quotes, another type of shul. I asked around, and I discovered that there's a Breslov shul nearby that has an interesting leader and a slow, melodic davening. My interest perked. I followed the directions to the Breslov shul. Breslov, sometimes referred to pejoratively as the Teta Chassidim, the dead Chassidim, they don't have a living Rebbe. And he describes, because I guess people reading this don't know, that the Breslov, you don't have a Rebbe, but you have a what's called a Rosh Chabura, a Mashpia, And he says in Kiyat Yovel, at the head of this Breslov shul, the Rosh Chabur is swaying back and forth intensely during the silent devotions. Regardless of where one stood, one could tell that this man was full of deep emotions that stood just beneath the surface. Never before had I seen such intense swaying. I asked one of the men sitting next to me to explain his behavior, but he motioned to me he doesn't want to speak during the davening. Well, have you ever seen a wrestler? Have you ever seen the shaking back and forth? To my Litvish mind, is this normal? Remember, I still recall this if it happened a minute ago when Reb Aaron Kotler went over to Yossi Tendler and told him, Ich lach bemerken, ich tracht als du daven schmunesreit zielang. That's Reb Aaron. I said, he told him off. Remember, Lakewood was shaking. You daven schmunesreit too long. What's going on here? But this shaking. Some minutes later, this leader suddenly disappears. No, do you recall what Hasidus was like that? Have you ever davened in an Arushana, Hasidic Sul, Rushan, Biyana? Everyone who comes, they had a tradition that the Rebbe, you had the men's section, a little women's section in back, on the side of the men, just for the Rebbe. No one has to see him during davening, his intense devotion. Sometimes children stare at me. I must look like a dummy or a davening. All right, I don't know. I can't help it. But the root here. Some minutes later, the leader suddenly disappears. Congregation continues davening, and to them it indicated to me that this is a common occurrence. But Dolphin, he's persistent. He asked, where'd the leader go? They point to a room. He went to the room, he opened the door, and he sees the Rosh HaBura screaming out the words of the Amida. Who heard of this? How do we daven? We daven in an undertone. Chana, right or wrong. Her voice is not heard. Her lips are moving. And here, davening opens the door, but the person davening looked at him, he realized, closed the door and get out of here. And here you have, right in the middle of Kiryat Yoel, Palm Tree City, right in the heart of Satmar, here you have Breslov. Well, before he left the shul, he asked, how does Breslov spring up in a Satmar community? And number two, I was also curious to find out if they shared the extreme anti-Zionist views of Satmar, or if they followed the more moderate views of the Breslov community in Eretz Yisrael. And they answered him. Number one, the Satmarov was not anti-Breslov. He quoted Reb Nachman. He had a positive point of view. But number two, even if Rabbi Yoelish might not have tolerated a Satmar community right within, not tolerated a Breslov shul right within the Satmar community, Rabbi Aaron Teitelbaum, who's the Rav of Kiryat Yoel, of the Monroe area, of Palm Tree, is more, quote, open-minded, end quote, and is accepting of non-Satmar groups in his village, as long as they do not interfere with the Satmar mode. And with that in mind, they are much more anti-Zionist than the Breslova in the State of Israel, who are part and parcel of the Israeli scene. Again, I don't want to talk about Berlin, but you have Breslov totally integrated. Wherever you turn, the army, elsewhere, you'll find rest of the Chassidim, not in Monroe. And this will also explain, remember I told you I got into trouble, I mean, I don't want to say trouble, but I got a hate letter. I mentioned that the Vishnu Sarebbe's brother, the previous Vishnu Sarebbe, there were brothers, but Vishnu never fights. It's not like Satma or Bhavav with this World War III. In Vishnitz, if you have the Yichis, you can open a shtibble. Wherever you go, you can open a shtibble. In Netanya, in Ranana, wherever you live, you're a Vishnitz Rebbe of. It's like Tonga Rebbe of Boston, Tonga Rebbe of Philadelphia, etc. So the Vishnitz Rebbe in Monroe is a total Satmar, anti-Israel 100%. It seems that if you wind up in that neighborhood, with that aura, with that influence, with that social environment, you follow anti-Israel. But Breslov is there, and due to the openness of Rabbanan Teitelbaum, Dolphin writes, there are currently 10 Breslovish shuls in Kiryat Yoel. So, interesting. How many shuls are there today, 8 years later? I wonder if it's still 10, 11, 12. But you see, Palm Tree City is not Me'ar Echad. That's one prime example. Page 109. Shabbos morning, I emerged in Mikvah, in the basement of the main Satma Shul. I decided I would pray as early as possible, following the example of my acquaintance Aaron Rakefet in Jerusalem, who davens at 6:30 Shabbos morning. But the earliest minyan in Kiryat Yoel is 8:30. I assumed the minyan would be sparsely attended and held in a less than respectable venue. Now, why does he assume that? Because he's at Lubavitcher. Lubavitcher's, and do you know an Ohel Rivka? I can tell you the people that ran Ohel Rivka when I walked in, Olech Hadash Ba'aretz, 53 years ago, they're turning over in their graves. Shabbos morning, 10:30, in the shtibel, on the side, they start davening. When I come in for mincha, their early mincha gedola, they're finishing the kiddush, the farvenya, nach the davenin, they're all there. Unbelievable. And it's, Charlie, a very bad influence. My son-in-law shul, he on Rehov Palmach, the beautiful building that the shul now has a sharing with the city building, and they came over to my son-in-law, the young couples, the kids wake up late until they get to shul. They want to make a late minyan when the regular minyan is done. You know what time they start davening? 10:30. Oh my gosh. Reb Keshel Schechter is right. We debated this 20 years ago. Says the Rabbi Carson. Tfila Shalom Bizman. Reb Keshel is a weakling. Said the gong fought that battle and lost. You're right, it's Shalom Bizman, but I don't want to write them out of Yiddishkeit because of it. 10:30. So he wants an 8:30 minyan. Uh-huh. But look, to my great surprise, I discovered I would be praying in a stunning sanctuary with great lighting, seats made from real wood, not just plastic, and a respectable group of Hasidim who prayed together at a good speed. I was honored at being called to the Torah, and several of my co-worshippers greeted me and offered the traditional Shalom Aleichem greeting. Although my co-worshippers did not know me personally, my religious identity was clear to them. My full beard, broad, trim black fedora, and black frock bespoke loud and clear that I am a full-fledged Chabad Chassid. Oh, wow. So you see, this is unbelievable. Here you have a Chabadnik, davening in a Satmar shul, 1970s, he would have needed bodyguards to get in and get out in one piece. And here they gave him an aliyah, and they give him a yashar koach. What a description. From there he proceeded to the Toldos Aaron shul. Now, you all know Toldos Aaron, having prayed with this group from their headquarters in Mei Shearim, I thought it would be interesting to see their shul in Kiryat Yoel. Their minyan was pretty standard, just normal, Toldos Aaron. But look where they fit in. Satmar. You follow? It's a magnet for all these groups that are Eder Haredit and beyond. You want a bedfellow, it is Satmar. But now we're coming to the high point. By this point it was around 11:30, and I began wondering if I should not head back to my host family. They told me they had planned on making Kiddush on Shabbos around 1 p.m. And I did not wish to make them wait on my behalf. Kiddush, 1 p.m. I thought you got to make Kiddush before half the day is gone.
Even for that.
Chaydim, Chassidim, Harishonim. Elliot, it's a good life in Israel. I make Kiddush Shabbos morning by 8 o'clock. 8 o'clock, yes. Baruch Hashem. Sev, what time do you make Kiddush? Let's hear. 8 o'clock. All right. I started walking back on Shinev Street. Shinev Rebbe. Relatives, Taikabab. When I noticed an unusual sight, two men were walking together. One dressed in the full Shabbos regalia of a Satmar Chassid. The other was clean shaven, with a mutton short suit and tie. I asked one of the local residents standing nearby if there are many clean-shaven men living in Kiryat Yoel. He told me that indeed it is uncommon. But some of the residents have non-Satmar relatives that live outside Kiryat Yoel and come to stay with them for Shabbos. In addition, some of these men grew up in a staunch Satmar home, but they rejected some of the mores of the community at a later stage. Yet, as they are still observant, they come to Kiryat Yoel for Shabbos and stay with their families. Okay. You can understand that. You have all types of Jews. Baruch Hashem, they should remain from. Fine. But while he's discussing these clean-shaven people, he notices two gentlemen who are headed, I'm told, to a, quote, interesting minyan with different types of people. End quote. As my objective was to truly experience Kiryat Yoel, I decided to quietly follow them. They soon entered a small, very special shtibel. Now mind you, we're talking, it's about 12 noon now. Shabbos, Palm Tree City. The shtibel known as the Kollel was founded by a Mr. Klein, a wealthy man in his 30s. All right, a businessman, you can be wealthy in your 30s. I don't have to tell you, 47th Street photo, etc. He wanted to build a special place for all those that feel disenchanted with their Hasidic upbringing and are looking for love, acceptance, and brotherhood with their fellow seekers. These lost souls of Kiryat Yoel, which include some divorcees, some newly married men who cannot deal with social pressures, gather at this place. Before I enter the kollel, I am greeted by a man who looks like a chassid, although he has a trim beard. He immediately realizes that I am a Lubavitcher and proudly engages me in a philosophical conversation. Intrigued, I continue to engage him for several more minutes, all the while noticing the Hasidic-looking men with their long, shiny, black frocks and non-trimmed beards as they enter and exit the building. Noticing the latest of the hours, already past noon, I paused our discussion to inquire, how is it that these men are seemingly devout visage are now only beginning to pray? He answered me that many of them are sincerely struggling with issues of faith and observance, and I should be thankful that one could find them in any shul. You get the picture what's happening here? These are people, all right, you know, when you're dressed normal Western style and you're clean shaven, and suddenly they find out, wow, this guy knows Shas and Paiskim. But here you have people, long beards, payas, the whole regalia, the clothes, satma. 12:30, they're first coming to daven, and we'll see. Who knows if there is, some are not even davening. And this onlooker tells Dolphin, you're lucky that they're going to shul, to any shul. Now notice what was said here. Divorcees, if you've been following Jewish Action, there have been very interesting articles. This is a topic that haunts us today. I was growing up, no one got divorced. Was everyone happy? I don't know. It's just we were Catholics. Divorce didn't enter the picture. If you've heard my lectures on sex and marriage, it's all on YU Torah many years ago, I claimed that if two young people marry and they follow Reb Moshe's advice, what to look for, the attraction, similar backgrounds to a certain degree, and a reputation that you're religious, marry and trust in God that this is the lady or the man that was predestined for you. If you know the Gemara in Sanhedrin, Chafet, the whole sugya there, that's the secret of marriage. And leave sex, remain sex. Don't take sex out of sex. The pull, the attraction, the uniqueness. Today, like, hey, kids are 15, 16, they're having sex. What's sex? There's nothing there. They're eating, there's falafel here, falafel there, sex here. We have de-sexed sex, and that's a tragedy. I claim you can work out a happy marriage. Today, you have a lot of divorce. And divorcees, many times it's a problem to find themselves. It's really, you have to have a feeling of graciousness and understanding. And you know, I look at it, not everyone is so fortunate. I didn't realize the impact of Malka and I, our marriage. We had this important doctor over, we're consulting with him, and my eldest daughter's there, and she tells the doctor, my parents are unique. They're married, how many years we married? 60. Can I know? More than 60. But it's not just they're married 60 plus. They knew each other 5 years before. My father was my mother's madrich in B'nai Akiva. Well, my teacher, I was teaching. I write about it in Washington. And then I realized, you know, this is unique that my daughter, she's also very happily married, well, more than at least 30, 35 years already. And with divorce, yeah, you have to have umlaut, you have to have, how do you say that in English? You have to have, it's to understand what people go through. And a lot of times divorcees can't find themselves. It's a challenge. And you can see what he says, divorcees davening at this minute. See, it makes sense. In addition, he talks about the first year of marriage. Newlyweds, you know, beyond the first. By the way, what I said yesterday, I'm very proud of Baruch Shekivanti. I hear what I said. I hear it on the radio at night. I hear the news. I said about that the Chalelias and the Likud don't even give Menachem Begin a year of peace. They're already attacking him, already fighting how to succeed him. Give him a year at least. He regained, he was re-elected. Bow to him.
Bibi.
You said Menachem Begin. Oh, excuse me. Bibi, I'm all right. It's not a bad mistake. Bibi, give him credit. And at night I hear that some of the people in my party, Tucker, are criticizing, and they must have heard the Shia. I don't know. I was ahead of them, ahead of the crowd. But you see, that when you get married, if you have to understand marriage, and this is a real problem, because how are we raised? How are we raised? You go to yeshiva. Oh, you're a Talmud Chacham, Slabotka Musa, Bishvili Nivra HaOlam. To get married, you got to be able to see the other person. You have to know how to compromise. You have to understand that we're different, a man, a woman. Our entire gestalt, our entire psychological, physiological, emotional, so many differences. And I have to tell you, let me end off with two stories. So I have to tell you, and this is a true story. The fellas came back in the kollel. They were at a wedding of a very prominent Rosh Yeshiva. I don't want to mention his name, a dear friend of mine. And his daughter refused to walk around the chatan. And she's marrying the son of a Ponovitcher. They asked this Rosh Yeshiva, my high, he said, feminism. Feminism it is. So the boys asked me, Rebbe, how do you explain that? You know, there was on the feminist by the walk around. I said, it's very simple. Young man, you're now about to marry. Until now you have been very self-centered. And the yeshiva world has taught you Bishvili Nivra HaOlam. You have studied and Godlet HaDam, the out of Slabotka. To work out a happy marriage, you have to recognize there's someone else that you have to respect, that you have to understand, that you have to please. And she will walk around you seven times to make a chazaka and remind you that she is here. She is now your better half. And the guys around me, you're the greatest dasher or the biggest faker. That's what I would do. You have to turn it around. And now let me go one step further. I've been asked by many monkeys. I told you yesterday, I have no problem. But Yitav Hashem et Pi Aton. The Aton asked you, Rebbe, how? You say the bracha shelo asani isha? You embarrassed your wife, and they were friends of mine, Orthodox, world famous rabbanim. They stopped saying the bracha aloud. Say, idiot. The Rav said the Rav Moshe Feinstein, Rabbi Kotel said the Halavai, you should treat your wife the way they treated their wives. But I gave a very simple answer. I said, when you be pregnant, then you can raise the question again. Until then, keep your mouth shut. Now I want to come back to yesterday's shiur, the Beit Joseph book. Remember, Elliot? So I want to tell Rabbi Grunstein, everyone will tell you what they loved the best in the book. What I loved the best was the following little story. Rivka tells the story. One of her brothers married a fine lady of German origins. Charlie, how many hours do you wait between meat to milk?
3 hours.
She'd really wait 1 hour, but all right, your machmir is 3 hours somehow. You know, the Gemara is 1 or 6. Fine. So this lady married a Sfadik boy, has to take on husband, 6 hours. So here they are sitting in Rav Ovadia's house, and Rav Ovadia's wife, Margalit, was very special, and a special balabuster and cook. And Rav Ovadia notices his daughter-in-law sitting at the table, pregnant. She's not eating the meat Friday night. And he turns to her, and he says, Shabbat? And the girl says, Kvod HaRav, I want to have a cup of coffee with milk. And to wait 6 hours, I'll be asleep. And he turns to her and says, Tochalat HaBasa, Tehneh, Tehni, Shabbat? L'cha Shlosh Sha'at? Tishti Kos Cafe. Fine, she got a psak from the Gadol Hador. Later that night, his son, and you know, the kids become firmer than you at times, his son says, Abba, makaraka, nice psak. And Rabbi Ovadia slams his face and says, when you'll be pregnant, you'll ask me the question again. My dear students, we haven't totally finished, but we're at the tail end. Yes, he answers the shtibbel, and what a different shtibbel. 12:30, this first davening. Some are davening, some are playing, some are tense, some can't handle it. First year of marriage, or early marriage, you're not prepared. Today they give classes preparing you for marriage under the auspices of YU. Today I have Talmidim who, when they were getting married, went for counseling before they were married. Went for counseling. This is 40 years ago. I was laughing at them. Baruch Hashem, they have grandchildren today and still very happily married. Okay? This is what he wandered into. And we'll see next week that you have a new phenomenon. People who look satma, look, quote, frum, to the second power, end quote, and in reality are far from frum and far from committed. And this problem that Avi Cement raises is right there, right in the Torah world, right in the Hasidic world. Litvakin who broaden have no problem. They can go on to university. You follow? It's different. They can find themselves. Hasidim are fenced in. And this is something that Rabbi Dolphin discovers in Palm City. You won't discover it in Chabad. Because to be a Chabadnik, basically, you have to be committed. We spoke about that last week, and there's truth to it. Chabad, it attracts you. Endless balei tshuva, endless Johnny-come-latelys. And Chabad is a very good percentage. It's amazing among the shluchim that the Rebbe gave them a bracha, I'm responsible for your children. It's interesting. And they raised the children all over the world, in Kalamazoo, Michigan, etc. And 90% of the kids turn out very solid, strong, and committed. My dear students, when we finish up the visit to Satmar, to Palm City, we'll go into another volume that appeared that I highly recommend to you, and we'll deal with the tremendous infighting that took place in Satmar two times over. Once when the Yoyalish died, and then the real World War III with the two sons. And we'll see how it ends and where it stands today. And then we come in to perhaps the most important shirm I will ever give, the refutation of the anti-Zionist movement and why it had to come about through the Avia Votatuma, Theodor Herzl, and nobody else. Okay? So what did we do today? We continued the Machlokes, we finished the Machlokes, we've come into the contemporary period, we are visiting Palm City with my dear friend Rabbi Chaim Dalfin. Are there any questions from the erudite people sitting in front of me? Yomo? Yomo. One of a kind. And the Baruch Shalom made him. They threw the mold away. All right. I want to say Das Vadanya, thank you from Baruch. And also, I want to mention, very important, give me another minute. Don't turn me off. Give me another minute here.
No, I'm just going to take the mute off. That's what you want.
Right. December 25th and 26th, they're no shigurim. That's when the kolo, that's when we're closed here. Hanukkah. But I'm telling you in advance, Sunday, Monday, towards the end of Hanukkah, I think it's the 6th and 7th days, check the calendar, there are no Sheyurim. The name of Rav Ovadia's son-in-law, Rivka's husband, let's see if I can pronounce it right, my nephew sent me, I know the name, I just know how to pronounce it, Chikotai, is that, am I pronouncing it right, Dr. Zev? Chikotai. She's Rivka Joseph Chikotai. If anyone wants, Mori, I think you'll be, this is a tremendous article, Mishpacha magazine. I know this individual. He's the head of the Shluchim of Chabad. And he's a world-class figure, capable beyond anyone's comprehension. Rabbi Moshe Kotlarsky, it's pronounced. And this is the article on him. I can't throw this away. I mean, I read it. If anyone's interested, pass it on. This is an article, and anyone wants a reprint of it, we can reprint anything. Bezrat Hashem, just tell me. This is an article, I've seen this article before. It's on the Rav and Professor Heschel and their opposition to ecumenicism, to what the Catholic Church wanted to do 50 plus years ago. This is a very interesting article from my Talmud, the Sfarim blog, Mark Shapiro. It deals with the forged Yerushalmi and a Rabbi Friedlander who wrote something supporting the forgery, and they claim this article, Rabbi Friedlander, doesn't exist, and they claim it's Professor Shaul Lieberman, who had a good sense of humor, who forged that volume. It's very fascinating to read. Whether it's true or not, I don't know. Finally, if anyone has not seen, there was an article in Yisrael HaShavua on the present situation in Russia. I highly recommend that article. It was proofread this morning by...
No, it wasn't. I did not read it. I just looked...
Glanced. It's very interesting. I think, for me, it's very moving because I recognize everything they write about. On the other hand, it's a vastly different Russia for the Jews than the one I functioned under in the 1980s. Very fascinating article. And if anyone wants the article on Orthoprax, Orthodox, it's also available for your enjoyment. Now, open it to the world. Are there, they can speak? Does anyone have any
questions?
Anyone have any questions from around the world now? Okay, I want to thank you very much for joining us this morning. It really was a wonderful experience with so many bright faces in front of me and on the screen. Until we meet again in health and happiness, Das Verdanya.